You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
We'll take a glass together, and we will lift it to the good life. And as we're lifting it, we will most sincerely say, we'll take a glass together!
This is Equity One, Broadway's happy hour.
Pour yourself a drink and join us as we chat about life, theater, and everything in between.
I'm Elliot Maddox.
And I'm Caleb Dickey. Join us for your Equity One.
Cheers!
Hi, Caleb.
Hey, Elliot. Lovely to see you today.
So nice to see you today. Recording the pod. What's that? It's been a minute.
I'm already coughing from surprise.
Welcome to this week's episode of Equity One, Broadway's happy hour, where we sit and chat with some of your favorite people about town.
Yes.
In the theater arts community. We are so excited to bring on our guest today, one of New York City's premier drag queen entertainers, politicians. Marty Gould Cummings is with us today. Hi, Marty.
Beep, beep, beep. Okay, hey, what's up?
You bring your own sound horn with you. That's
everywhere.
Great.
Everywhere I go. I have the app on my phone, too.
Oh, my God.
You guys still have it.
I don't know. Yeah, it'll
take too long to find it. but hi. Good morning,
hi.
Afternoon, evening. What are we telling the viewers this is, or the listeners?
Oh, they know. They know that we will gather around for a cocktail or a cup of coffee whenever.
Yes.
Well, good morning, afternoon, evening, listeners. Thank you for
what is time during a pandemic. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, our listeners know that we are nothing if not chaotic. So,
same.
How are you? How are you today on this day?
On this day, I'm okay. I'm chill. Anxious for, the next 2 weeks.
To see yeah, 15 days on yeah. the yeah. recording.
Until I just clocked that this morning. I was like, okay, we have 2 weeks. Like, a lot can happen in 2 weeks. So we got to, stay vigilant, I guess.
Yeah. But for all of the New York listeners, they should know that early voting begins October 24th, mm-hmm. and your polling location for early voting might be different than your regular voting location. So go to vote.nyc to find out where to vote early. And make sure you vote early so you avoid long lines and chaos.
I love yes. voting early. I always vote early. Whenever New York started, I was like, oh, great, I'm going to do this. And I was obsessed. So easy.
Yeah.
And it's so good that New York adopted voting early into our process because it helps more people be able to vote because they don't have to depend on getting off work one day or,
Well, voting should be a holiday. The actual
agreement, right, yes.
It should be a holiday. I think it's ridiculous that it's not. But a lot of companies are giving people the day off this year to do it.
That's amazing.
Yes. I've never voted early and I got my card and they're like, here's your poll. It's a different place. So I'm like, I'm ready to go this Saturday or Sunday between, I think it's 10 and 4 and I'm going to do it this weekend. So
same girl. I can't wait.
I'm going to go on Monday. I'm going to let the weekend kind of do its thing. And then because I don't have work, I'm going to go Monday. But I'm so excited to vote.
Yes. And you have to vote, girl, because we want you to get back to work. And right now, our government is not helping the arts, and we need to get on the good foot and save our stages. Okay.
Exactly. Okay. There's a picture going around on the internet of a production of Mary Poppins in New Zealand. And they were like, we're holding the light on for you guys, everywhere else around in the world. I'm like, New Zealand has a full audience, no masks because they controlled the virus. It's like,
oh, they have no masks. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I zoomed in on the picture and there wasn't any masks. So I was like, wow.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? No, I saw Jerry Mitchell posted something recently of a South Korean production of Kinky Boots, and it was a packed theater, but they were all wearing masks, and it was kind of that same thing about we are sending the theater community love, whatever. And I was like, all it takes is just wearing them. It's just a piece of fabric. I'll just put it on your fucking face. Oh, can I curse on this? Do children?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Bleep. I always get so nervous on my podcast, like cursing, because I have a lot of Drag Race girls on, and like all their fans are kids. And I'm like, I don't want to be a bad role model. But fuck it, the kids aren't. This is a grown up podcast.
You're drag queens.
It's so simple. Just wear a goddamn mask. It's like Oh my god. I don't like to yell at people. I'm like a nice queen. However, I was on 46th Street the other day because my drag daughter was doing a socially distanced outdoor show at Don't Tell Mama, which I'm doing this Saturday as well. If this podcast doesn't be for them, please come to the show. Well, come on Saturday night, 7 p.m. at Don't Tell Mama, free show, make a reservation. Can't wait. My first New York City appearance in 7 months. Anyway, so, you know, it's outdoor, social distance show, whatever. And I was gathering my things to leave because it's on the street. Mm-hmm. This girl bumps into me, no mask. I say, oh, excuse me. She goes, what? And I was like, oh, you should put on a mask. You're in a crowd. And she goes, I work at a hospital. I'm fine. And I was like, wait. So there's a lot to unpack here. I was like, one, no, you're not immune from viruses because you work at a hospital. Two, what hospital and who's your supervisor? Because I think they should know you're out and about without a mask. And then she turned to her boyfriend and was like, I thought New York was like fun. So apparently they're in town from Boston. So I'm like, don't come. New York is working very hard to get back to work. Don't come into our city and like fuck around because you don't want to wear a mask because it's going to mess up your makeup. Bitch, it messes my makeup up too. And I have a lot more on than you. Okay. So put on a goddamn mask. I want to go back to work. I want my husband to go back to work. I don't want to be performing every 7 months. Like, I want to do it every day.
Yeah.
Put your fucking mask on.
And look, if they were in from Boston, Massachusetts just got added to the quarantine list because their numbers are going up.
Well,
so
maybe because they have people who work at the hospital.
Come here.
Just like out and about on 46th Street.
Oh my god, I'm gonna get like a composite sketch of this girl and go to every hospital in Boston and be like,
have you seen her?
Work here? Is this your employee? I was so pissed. I was pissed. My blood boiled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say though, like, we went to dinner on 46th Street last night. We went to Joe Allen because they just reopened. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it warmed my little heart to see 46th Street because it was like vibrant, but everyone was being safe. It just reminded me of like how proud I am of like New York and the work we've done and how much we like care about everyone that lives here.
New Yorkers are holding it down. And 46th Street, with the exception of that girl who was visiting from Boston, is very safe, which is why you should come to Don't Tell Mamas this Saturday, October 24th, 6:15 seating, 7 p.m. show. Social.
Yes. Have your Venmo ready. Right. Yes. No dollars, but
no
have
dollars.
Your Venmo ready.
I'm not having your dirty dollar. I am so proud of this city because first of all, open streets is something New York should have done way
long
before
time
the
ago.
Pandemic,
yes.
You know, like, I love seeing not just 46th Street, but like, you know, in my district where I'm running for city council, you have 105th Street to 110th on Columbus every Saturday and Sunday, completely closed down. So the restaurants can expand further into the streets.
It's amazing.
Up on Broadway in the 140s and 150s, all the restaurants have beautiful dining outside. And it's a great way to not only support local business, but there's a lot of smaller restaurants and bars and cafes that you may have never noticed before. And now you're able to see them. Mm-hmm. It's, to me, community building. I think it's something that needs to stay. I know that they extended it through 2021, but this is something that should always be in our city because with open streets, open dining, outdoor plants, it brings down the usage of cars and promotes an opportunity for our city to build more bus lanes, wider bus lanes, more bike lanes and pedestrian walkways. And we can become a city that is a bus and bike city. One that helps our carbon footprint. It helps combat climate change at the local level. It promotes local business and it's getting people on mass transit rather than in cars and getting people to exercise on bikes, which is great. So and to make this fully possible, we need to tax billionaires on the state level and put that money partially into making our bus system free so more New Yorkers can get on it.
Absolutely.
And there it is.
And
I'm sold,
So that was a tie-in to New York is holding this shit down and we look great with our open streets. But this is like the expansive beyond just like visually it looks great, but there's like a whole system that it can really help our communities. And I think it's a great way to, you know, so much of the city has been taken over by big box chains, and this is a chains, and this is a way to get local businesses more support, which I think is important. I don't want another TGI Fridays. I want a locally owned business.
100%. I just think that, like, seeing 46th Street, I mean, it's kind of now being what it was kind of always meant to be, like this restaurant row. Like, why would we need cars to go through it? Just go down a block and turn around to get where you need to go. Like, it's
a walk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, New York is like, should be a transit walking city anyway. Like, you're right. We shouldn't be encouraging more cars in the city. Go elsewhere.
Yeah.
Well, my God, there's incessant banging in my hallway right now. I don't know what's going on. These walls are very thin. Well, we like to start out each interview by asking our guest what first got them interested in the arts when they were a young person.
Oh, this is such a cliche answer.
Please.
Okay, this is so cliche. My cousin Sophie is like a year younger than me, and she lived in North Carolina, but she would come up. Our grandmothers were sisters. So what is that? First cousin once removed or whatever. So anyway, so we would always hang out and play, but she would bring this duffel bag full of like costume jewelry and dresses and stuff. And we would always play dress up together. And I loved it. And I was like a drag queen from day one. Like fully loved like playing make believe and putting on these costumes, whatever. So then when I was like 5 or 6 years old, we would always put on little skits and stuff for our family, but there's a local community theater, Churchill Theater, near where I'm from, literally in the middle of a cornfield, this community theater. And they took me for my birthday to a production of Annie. And I was like, oh my God, I want to be an orphan. And I went home and told my mom that, and she was like, fuck off. No, like, she was not happy. Like, but I was so captivated by these kids who were like, you know, my age on stage, like the emotions were so strong that they couldn't discuss it by talking. They had to sing. And then when singing wasn't enough, they had to dance through it. And I was like, oh my God, like you can turn like emotion into oh my God. Like, and I was so mesmerized, and I was like, that's what I want to do. And my aunt lived in Tarrytown, New York. So we would come to New York all the time as a kid. And so it like, you know, tied in when I like, you know, was told, oh, that's where like people go to do that, you know? And I was like, oh, that's where I have to live. So that's how I got into my love of theater. And also as a kid watching the Rosie O'Donnell show, I loved watching the Rosie O'Donnell show and seeing all the Broadway guests. And it's kind of like a full, like I'm very, you know, I'm very grateful in my, drag career that I've had, and you know, Elliot, you did my show Stage Fright that we had, and I was so fortunate to fuse drag and Broadway together through that. And so many of the people who I grew up like idolizing on Rosie's show became guests of my show and have become friends of mine. And it just is like that like, it's a thing that I always tell people who are going through like what do I do next? I'm like, listen, like you are capable of achieving anything. And sometimes it will happen overnight, and sometimes it will take decades, but like, don't give up on like your, don't give up on it, you know, like, and that's the beauty of like theater and music and art is like, even though like there's a Broadway shutdown right now and nightclubs aren't open for drag in the way they were, like there is a world where it will come back. So don't like give up on that vision for yourself. And so like, I don't know, I'm just super grateful. I know Rosie now, and name drop. but like, I, you know, that what the you know, I'm really good friends with her brother. He's an assembly member on the Upper West Side, and we're very close because of like our political lives. But you know, I was really grateful that I was able to like express to Rosie like, this is a memory that I have with my grandmother, that like you have one of my dearest childhood memories is shared with my grandmother because of you. Like, you did that, you know? And anyway, I love theater a lot. That's the point of this, is I fucking love theater. And it started with Annie at the Churchill Community Theater in a cornfield. And here we are.
It's so funny, like, that you said you preface that it would be a kind of cliche answer. It's not a cliche answer, but it is interesting to see like the like commonalities in like what got people like interested in theater.
I feel like Annie is a cliche. I've heard so many like queers be like, I saw Annie. How many everybody's heard it? The rights to that must be very affordable.
Oh, yes.
Seen Annie. Yeah.
It's Annie, it's Peter Pan, it's like those kind of like moments for people. And then the Rosie Show too is like, mm-hmm. when people say that, like I kind of like, when people say that, it always makes me remember coming home after school and watching it and kind of like subconsciously getting Rosie, you know, when I was like, you know, understanding like that that was someone similar to me. And it's just interesting that we have that like shared experience, a lot of people.
Oh yeah. I mean, she did like, it was incredible how she had this huge, like the most popular talk show on TV at the time, next to Oprah, you know, like the most popular show. She was winning Emmys left and right. And she had this platform where she could have easily like not, because a lot of talk shows don't put Broadway on. And she made it a mm-hmm. point. Like I vividly remember seeing Heather Headley singing from Shadowland. And it was like, oh my, I was like so captivated. And seeing Alice Ripley and Emily Skinner during Sideshow. I was like I was so, I don't know. There's something so special about theater. And I can't remember the actor who like said that the quote of like, when words aren't enough, you sing, and when singing isn't enough, you dance. But like, as a kid, that like seeing that and recognizing like, oh, these women are connected and they're always, and they can't be torn apart. And the emotions are so strong that they have to sing about it. Like, I just was like blown away by that. And I wanted that in my life always to be connected to someone else. To be Alice Ripley. That's
yes,
what I
yeah,
wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
Always.
We as kids, we would like get that trunk of clothes out and we would always be making up shit like plays, musicals. And I think that's what a lot of people connect as their kids, just like playing make believe. And that just like grows into theater. And that's how I connected with your story too. So there's that.
Whatever. Where are you from?
Ohio. So like rural, like farmland. So
my dad's from Ohio.
Oh yeah. What part?
Well, it's Clinton County. It's a little town called Sabina. It's an hour south of Columbus and an hour north of Cincinnati. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's real small.
No, I'm really close to, I'm in Greene County. So that's like nearby. Yeah, cause I'm like, it's the same distance as well. So maybe Where? We're like cousins.
Maybe. I don't know.
Those dress up sessions would have been really
exactly
everything.
when did you said you started, you know, you were doing drag from day one, but when did you see drag as like, oh, I could do this and like make money or do it to express my art? Like what was your journey into becoming a drag queen?
Sure. Oh my god, did you just pick up my sniffle on the microphone? Did you hear how loud that was? Sorry.
I'm so distracted because apparently my building is being torn apart by chainsaws. Well, so,
I don't hear it at all.
Oh my god, it's insane.
Bang on the door. It's like in like I always think of like whenever you have to bang on anything. Like not that I'm like banging on my walls a lot, but I always think of Beaches when Bette Midler's like send up the heat.
Yes, yeah.
It's a very New York thing. What did you ask? Oh, drag. Okay. when did I know drag would make me I accidentally became a drag queen. Like it was not on purpose. I feel like I tell this story all the time. I'm sorry for any listener who's heard this story before, but fucking deal with it. I accidentally, so this ties into like, I always tell people it's important to have goals and visions, but it's also important to know that you need to listen to the cues the universe is giving you, because you may have an idea of what you want in your life, but the universe knows there's something else for you and it can be connected to that goal or vision. But pick up on the cues, take, you know, if something keeps like hitting you over the head, you might want to pay attention to it, you know? And so it's okay that the dream doesn't look exactly how you first dreamed it. You know, like when I was growing up, I always said, I want to be on Broadway. I want to do that. I want to, you know, whatever, have a Tony, blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, I, at the time when I was going to school, I moved to New York in 2005. And at the time I went to AMDA and, it's fine. It's whatever. It is what it is. And any of you go to AMDA?
No. Mm-mm. It's a part of your journey. If you like, you learn.
Yeah, it's part of my journey. Yeah. 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 now that I like, you know, have a, they want to like, they're always calling me. They didn't give a fuck about me when I was there. But anyway, that's not what this is about. We love, grateful. I had a lot of wonderful teachers there and grateful for a lot of friends who I'm still friends with. Anyway, the point is, when I was 17 and going to AMDA and right off the farm in New York City in 2005, there wasn't a lot of roles for someone like me. The only roles out there were, you know, in the producers or Lacage, and they were for people who were not 17. You know, mm-hmm. You had to be, you know, I'm not a great dancer, so I wouldn't have been a Kajal, but I could play what, you know, the lead, but not until I was like 50, you know, so there was no roles for someone like me. And I was told that constantly in school. Mm-hmm. And one of my teachers even said, oh, you'll never make it. You'll just be a drag queen. And the idea that being a drag queen isn't making it now to me is laughable, because every great success I have in my life is because I do drag, and all art is valid. So like, mm-hmm. to kind of like shit on that art form, like now at the time I was like hugely offended because I didn't know any better, you know, but you know, so drag happened accidentally. And I did that. There was a show that had opened off Broadway and they were casting replacements. And I went in, and at my final callback, the writer, the book writer and the score and lyricist writer were in there, and the director, and they said, we know the show's already open and it's already been Drama Desk nominated. It's like set, but there's something about you. We want to rewrite this character. Like the show had already been open and they're like, we want to rewrite this character. It was a BDSM version of Oliver Twist. And they were like, and I went in for Charlie Bates. And they said, would you be comfortable if we made this character someone who experiments with gender and drag, would you be comfortable with that? And I said, well, yeah, I need the gig. So I did it. And my boyfriend at the time, you know, was like, oh, this is so fun. And like, you're obviously like having such a good time with it. And then I got cast in this like indie, I don't even remember the name of the film, but this like indie film where I had to do drag. And so I was like, oh, this, I'm actually having like a lot of fun doing this. And so my boyfriend Anthony was like, you should like, when we go to stuff, like he was doing Hair, the revival of Hair at the time. And so he was like, we were going to a lot of like parties and events. And he was like put on a heel, like who cares? Like throw on like a fun scarf or a blouse or whatever. And just like, so I like started just like being like very androgynous and experimental with my clothing. And I had so much fun with it. And it was tapping into the side of me that I kind of suppressed because I was made fun of for it as a kid, and it like came alive again. And then we ended up breaking up, and I was like, I still want to experiment with this, whatever. So I had this birthday party at this bar on Vig 27, which is no longer open. It was a little gay bar. But I said, oh, I want to do like a big Broadway birthday night. So Lily Cooper and Adam Cantor and Matt Doyle and Frankie Grande performed, and I was like, I'm gonna MC that. It was kind of like the original stage fright, the show that you mm-hmm. did, Elliot. And I was like, and I'm gonna MC this thing. And it was like in drag, and I was the most busted, like my no wig, crooked lashes, no track, like just the most atrocious looking drag ever. Like this was before YouTube tutorials and girls would come out. Like today, queens look like fucking runway ready right mm-hmm. out the gate in my day. So anyway, so the bar manager was like, you're really funny, do you want to have a weekly show? And it does not happen like that. Is not how this business works ever. But I said, well, sure, I need the gig. So I did it, and then 3 weeks later another bar hired me, and then another bar hired me, and it became my career. Now over a decade later, like, here we are. But it's like, the point of that, that's how I got into drag. I think that was what your question was. This was a very long answer. But the point is, like, don't ever limit yourself to what you think your career is supposed to look like. Like, there are so many, like, I don't know. A lot of good shit has happened in my life because of drag. And I'm grateful that I went to that audition that awakened that in me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I always think it's good for people to hear these stories where, you know, maybe your expectations, your things don't necessarily meet how you expect things to go in your life, but it ends up being exactly how things are supposed to go. And I mean, you know, look at the time we're in right now when, you know, you could expect a certain thing for your year and then the world is completely shut down and you just have to kind of roll with it and just kind of accept things how they are and be game and be open. You know, I think it's important for people to hear that, especially in the arts, which are, you know, there's no clear path. There's no like one way to be a successful artist.
Yeah. And sorry, Caleb.
Just going to say, like, always lead with like your genuine self. Like, don't try, like you're saying, pigeonholing yourself into like, I have to look this way, I have to sound this way. But if you actually enjoy something, lead with that. And then people are going to notice the confidence in you that you're exuding. And then that's what's just going to take off, like what you said.
Yeah. I think also, like, you know, success is not, I feel like we, our society, put so much emphasis in monetary, like money as success. And like, you can have great success and do really awesome things and make, like, and I don't know. I think, what am I trying to say? I think we put so much pressure on like the monetary successes of things when it's really like, no, like, for example, okay, I'll use this as an example. He might get mad that I'm using it, but so my husband Blake is an incredible musician. He's getting his PhD from NYU right now. He's a viola player. He's played in pits on Broadway. He's done, you know, he's played at Lincoln Center, played at Carnegie Hall, done with the New York Pops, blah, 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 all this stuff. Great. Wonderful. Very happy for him. But he, and you know, he wrote this classical album and independently produced it. No agent, no record label, put it on iTunes and Spotify. And 5 months later, he gets like a notification that like something's popping off and he sees it's number one on the classical iTunes chart. It's number 37 on the total iTunes chart and it's number 4 on Billboard. Like, how did that happen? You know, but he's not like making any money off of this album, you know, because Spotify takes like a million, whatever. But like, that's a big deal. Like, that is a success. Like, that is, he has done incredibly successful things in his career, but sometimes he gets very like, oh, well, I don't know. Like, you know, and it's like, well, babe, like, okay, so a big paycheck didn't come with it. That's fine. Like, how many people can say they wrote an album independently and it's on Billboard, you know? Yeah. And so it's like that. Like, success doesn't have to be money. Success is like you setting out and doing something that you believe in for your art and just doing it, whether one person listens to it or sees it or like a billion, like if you followed through and did it, like that is a success. That is a win, you know? And obviously we want to be like successful in our fields, like, you know, so we can have a living and stuff like that. But like, we need to change our views of what success is and not compare ourselves to, and I fell into this trap all the time. Like, I fell into the whole, you know, oh, another friend's going to Drag Race and I'm not, or what, and that, like, oh, you know, yeah. I have to like tell myself like, no, there are other things happening, to focus on and like, be joyful for my friend's successes and be joyful for my successes.
Yeah.
You know? I think you said like change how we look at success. And I think a lot of that comes from like award shows. I'm saying like, sorry, Tonys, but like this is kind of dumb having like a partial season Tony Awards. I think it's stupid because we're not giving the full season. It's not a like chance to show off. And why do we even need to limit it to 4? Just like, can we just show off all the shows that are in one season? And we just need to rechange how we look at award shows, I think. It's like a buy-in system anyways, isn't it? With producers?
Yeah, well, I think it's like silly. Like, Aaron Tveit is the only person nominated for actor, and he could still lose if he doesn't get the votes. Like, what a crapshoot. And especially with, like, Broadway shut down right now, you know? Yeah. Like, theater artists came together to... The thing that bothers me about the Broadway League... I'm going to get really into it. The thing that bothers me about the Broadway League is, like, we're going through a time in our country... We're going through the greatest...
Change.
The largest change in our country. The protests that have been happening in our country are larger than from the civil rights movement. Because things have not changed in this country, you know? For many people, and the Black artist community stood up and said, there needs to be change in Broadway. Who's behind the table? Who's in shows? Why is representation not like happening in these shows? And the Broadway League, instead of focusing on that, they were like, let's put together an award show.
Yeah.
Like, focus on the systemic racism within the industry and work to right the wrongs of the past instead of doing it. And like, I love it's no shade to the Tonys. Yeah. I love the Tonys, but there are other things happening right now. So what I would have loved from the Tonys is if they included all the shows or they just did like special Tonys and then like highlighted performances. I don't know what they could have done, but I think I don't want to take away because I'm excited for the Tonys, but I also like feel like there's a, like, I want to celebrate the artists who are nominated and celebrate the shows who are nominated. But I also think the Broadway League has, in addition to joining the Tonys, maybe they should do like a program to uplift artists who are.
Yeah. Out of work. Yeah, I mean,
or left out of the dialogue a lot.
Yeah.
It's a tricky conversation. I know because it feels kind of like, oh, this is weird. But also, like, I mean, a Tony Award nomination is a game changer for the career of an artist. And, you
very
know,
excited for Tina Turner.
Oh, Adrienne Warren.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, there's so many amazing performances and people that, like, you know, should be recognized, and that it's a hard balance because I think that, like, when people are like, this is annoying because then it goes on to the actors and the designers and the directors and people that are going to be recognized, where it really does fall at the top, which is
let's celebrate them and their achievement. Getting this nomination is a big deal. It is what, like, and they all deserve that nomination. Like, Aaron deserves it. Adrian deserves it. All the artists deserve that. Celia and Laura from Jagged Little Pill, who I love. Like, they all deserve this, you know. Robin
Robin Herbert.
And
one of the most incredible, like, dancers, performers we have on Broadway. And
Slave Play, which
the
was
the most in history.
Yes. The most in history, a queer Black playwright. I mean, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Atu Blackson Wood, who did Hair with My Ex, who's one of, like, the hardest working, most incredible people. Like, people, like, I am so excited for them. But in addition to that, like, so the blame is not on them. They are doing great work. They are living their dreams. We need to celebrate this success for them. But at the top, the Broadway League and the producers need to do more than just an award show. They need to be focusing on, okay, what is Actors Equity and SAG doing to work together to put more productions like Diana, which filmed their Broadway production for Netflix? How can we employ artists during this time in a way that we're working together, so musicians, stagehands, wardrobers, actors, you know, there's a whole group of people that are impacted by the shutdown outside of the people on stage, which are being hugely impacted. But there's a whole industry, hotel workers, taxis, restaurants, you know, there's a whole thing. So this is when we have to hold the Broadway League accountable for what are they doing, but also hold our electeds accountable to say, what are you doing to ensure there's protections in place? Because right now, gig workers are the ones who are struggling the worst. Yep. And gig workers, whether you're a performer or behind the scenes, I met with a union leader the other day for my campaign, whose union paints theaters. Like, that's what they do. And so, like, even they are now impacted by this. So what is our government doing to protect us right now. You know, a $1,200 check once is not enough. We don't have the $600 Mm-mm. anymore. So most people's unemployment, like health insurance, is running out for people because you need weeks of work. And if you don't have them, you don't have health insurance. We're in a pandemic. If you get sick and you have to go to the hospital and you don't have health insurance because you've been out of work, what do you fucking do? So that's why it is so important to vote early, starting October 24th in New York, and not only for the president, but look at who's running on the state level as well. Because in New York and in many states, there are state elections happening. And in New York state, we need a supermajority in the Senate to make it veto proof. Right now, we have a majority in the state Senate, but it's not a supermajority, so Governor Cuomo, who I don't think is great, can veto a lot of the bills that they're putting through. So we need a veto-proof majority to get packages passed in our state. So if you are listening to this and you don't live in New York, find out how your state legislative body is governed and see who's on the ballot when you go to the polls, because this impacts your community as well. Just because Broadway is in New York doesn't mean there aren't gig workers where you live, or restaurants that are hurting where you live, or hotel workers hurting where you live. So do your homework and due diligence and find out who every single candidate is and where they stand and how they would vote to protect people through this pandemic and after the pandemic. You know, one of the things that I've been fighting for with my campaign is we need rent and mortgage cancellation during this time. But in addition to that, there needs to be a rent freeze for up to 2 years after the pandemic. This pandemic is going to go on. You know, we're going to be feeling the ramifications of this for a long time. So we need, at a minimum, a 2-year rent freeze where landlords cannot raise your rent for 2 years so people can get back on their feet. But these are things that we need to fight for. And the way to do that is by activating.
Yep.
Especially locally, and because it's my understanding, because it's in a census year, that districts are going to be, you know, redrawn, as they often are. And so that affects not only who is representing you in your legislature, but also like what gets funding who is represent. And it's really important to vote how you want things to be allocated fairly, which is, there's one way to vote that it's done fairly. Okay. We're going to take a quick break and then we will be back to talk some more politics.
All right, we're back.
Now, we want to talk a little bit of politics here. When did you first get like so passionate about politics? Like what kind of like first got you excited about being political?
So what got me into politics? It was another one of those like universe things. Like, you know, when you keep getting something keeps presenting itself, pay attention to it, you know? So I, through drag, have been, my dog is so cute right now on the bed. I wish everybody could see what he's doing. such a monster. I love him. Okay. So, you know, through my drag, I got connected with a lot of different, you know, LGBTQIA plus organizations like the Ali Forney Center for Homeless Youth and Hedrick Martin Institute, home of the Harvey Milk High School, and these different places that I started volunteering with and working with. And so I got into activism in that way. I went to, then, you know, I was going to Occupy Wall Street back in the day and, you know, going to DC to march for marriage and with Broadway Impact. And so that was kind of like my dip into it. And then as I started getting more involved with Ali Forney Center, which I'm super grateful to be on the board of directors of now, but learning about like funding and how organizations like that get funding through discretionary budgeting on the city level and state funding and federal funding and how much that goes into play and how important it is to have that funding, which goes back to voting, like who you're electing. You want somebody who's going to fund organizations that help the most marginalized and vulnerable among us, right? So that was like my, for your, you know, dip into it. But it was never like I'm going to be a politician. You know, I, after 2016, like a lot of people, I kind of woke up to this like idea of, oh shit, democracy is fragile.
Yeah.
Like democracy is a very fragile thing. And like our voice matters. And I had this moment, I was on stage one night and I was making fun of like some shit Kellyanne Conway did or something like just ridiculous. And this bar owner pulled me aside and was like, oh, I hear that banging now. Click, clack, click, clack, click, clack. They are constructing up in that house. Mm-hmm. It's all good. It's New York. It's okay. Don't worry about it. It's the vibe. So I was on stage and I was like making fun, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And the owner pulled me aside after the show and was like, I think you're going to alienate straight clientele and you're making me as a voter feel uncomfortable. And I was like, well, did you vote for Trump? And I found out that, and I said, so you're profiting off of queer people while voting for somebody who actively is working to dismantle our rights. I quit. And I quit. Mm-hmm. It was in that moment that I, like, as I was literally like, I grabbed my purse and like left, and I was like walking away from the bar, and I was thinking like I am wasting this opportunity. Like, for whatever reason, the universe has given me a career where I was having 6 shows a week, and I had a lot of people following me on social media, and I was getting all these opportunities. But it was like in that moment, leaving that bar that night, where I was like, wow, I have an opportunity to not only like tell silly jokes about Kellyanne Conway or Mike Pence or, you know, Donald Trump, whatever, but I have an opportunity to really like talk about this like stuff in a way that can like help people who might have been uneducated about local politics the way I was, you know? And like, I didn't vote in every election before. I do now, but before I didn't, because I took it for granted. And I'm embarrassed of that now, but I took it for granted, like a lot of people, you know? Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, democracy is fragile. And like, just because you live in a progressive city doesn't mean like shit can't go down. You have to like look at who you're electing on this city, state, and federal level. And it was a big wake-up call for me. And so then I like got into politics and got super involved, like literally like from that moment. And here we are running for city council.
Work. Yes. And you're that election is in June, right? Of 2021.
June of 2021. Yeah.
That's so exciting. Now, what do you think is the biggest issue that we're facing as voters right now?
For November or June?
Yeah, for November.
Oh man. I mean, I think the biggest issue we're facing is, what kind of a country do we want to be? What do we fundamentally believe as a country, you know? And I think this country is founded on the principles of bigotry. We're a country that's built on stolen land.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a country that stole people from their land to build on this stolen land. And then a whole group of people were able to profit off of that. And they're still profiting off of it while other people aren't able to, you know, like slavery has never gone away, in the sense that we have a school to prison pipeline that is, you know, mass incarcerating people. We have a system that allows police to get away with the murder of Black people and just like who are just asleep in their home. We have a system that allows people to get away with that. We have a system that allows somebody like Amy Coney Barrett, who made a ruling as a federal judge saying that calling somebody the N-word in the workplace does not create a hostile work environment, who's now going to be a Supreme Court justice. Like, our system is doing everything it was designed to do, which is to uplift Christian, straight, white men and push everyone else down. And so now, in November, we have an opportunity to say, hey, our country's history is fucked. And our country's history is in the present. And mm-hmm. so we have an opportunity to, what kind of a country do we want to be? Is that what we want to continue to be? Or do we want to push forward in a way that makes our nation one that's equitable for all people, not just a few? And that's what we're voting for, because we have one side who's telling us, you know, that discriminating against others is what we should be doing. And then we have another side that's saying, listen, we need racial justice. We need to fight for Black lives and Black trans lives. And we need to fight for our Indigenous community. And we need to fight for our queer community. And we need to fight for women. And we need to fight for our environment and for jobs and for new jobs that aren't going to exploit or pollute our planet, but mm-hmm. new jobs are going to like make this a place that we can have a future. And so that's what's on the line. Like, and it seems like a very clear answer to me. It seems very clear. And I mean, I think that's the most important thing we're fighting for is like, what are we going to be?
Yeah, I agree. It's a cultural decision, I think, that we're facing right now. And I'm really hoping that I can feel proud after November 3rd about what we all decided. I know. Which is why it's so important to make your voting plan, vote early. If you're voting by mail, girl, it should already be sent in.
Girl, you put that in the post box now.
What are you waiting for? Like, go.
Girl, do it. Stop listening and go do it. But listen while you do it. Keep your ear on that.
And we're going to have a cute little fun game. Easy questions, no stress. You ready? So we've been talking about it, but what's your New York City restaurant that you're supporting throughout the pandemic? You're getting your takeout, you're going there.
Harlem Public, which I love. Tater tots are so good. Broadway Pets is a great place. I'm just like naming all the places I go to. So now people can like find out where I live. Please don't come to my house.
I was figuring it out. I support Hand Pulled Noodle. Love them. We get them once a week.
Andrew, yeah. The owner, is the sweetest guy. Oh my God. They just opened another location. I can't remember the address, but it's on Amsterdam. So good.
Right. Elliot, who are you supporting during this time?
Well, I mean, we went to Joe Allen this week. Mm-hmm. And I just moved, so we're supporting Fine and Dandy down mm-hmm. on 49th Street.
I love that store. Yes.
We love Fine and Dandy, Pocket Bar.
Can I tell you a story about Fine and Dandy?
Please.
Okay, so the viewers can't see, or the listeners can't see this, but this, I'm holding up a little stool, a little footstool, an antique footstool on the camera, and this was at Fine and Dandy's shop. They sell like bow ties and like knickknacks, and it's really
sweet. Yeah.
But they had this little thing. I wish the listeners could see this little grip. See, it's like ripped, little grandma. It's my little footstool. And I said to them, they had it in there, and I said, how much is it? They said, oh, that's not for sale. That's just decoration. I said, no, but I want to buy that. So how much is that? And I convinced them to sell me their like decorative footstool because it reminded me of my grandmother's house and I wanted it. So now I have it.
We talked about this with that crazy girl from Boston, but like, what is your makeup tips with masks?
I mean, it's a pain in the butt. I don't know. Just wait. Okay. Here's a little tip. I saw Brenda, my girlfriend, Brenda Darling, wearing a mask the other day that had it was like clear. So you could mm-hmm. see the makeup and it didn't like look all smudgy. I think that's a good thing. Clear, if you want to have like a beat face, get a clear mask.
Okay, great. Okay, so rank these five Halloween candies from worst to best. Okay, you ready?
Okay.
We have Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, Candy Corn, Butterfingers, Twizzlers, and Hershey's Chocolate Bar.
Worst will be Hershey's Chocolate Bar. And then Twizzler.
Okay.
And then Reese's. Reese's, Butterfinger, Candy Corn.
Candy Corn is number one.
Everyone hates Candy Corn, but you said specifically, this is not my favorite of these candies.
Halloween candy.
You mm-hmm. specifically said Halloween candy. If it was just yes. candy, I would rank differently. However, the question stated Halloween and candy corn, people shit on candy corn, but I love candy corn with those little pumpkin candies, those little sugar. Yeah. It's just a ball of sugar shaped like a pumpkin.
Yep. Yeah.
Love.
I was actually going to talk about that pumpkin candy because I love the pumpkin candy, but also with the candy corn, I like to bite off in segments. I go like,
white, me too.
Yellow, orange or whatever. I'm so, yeah.
Yes, me too. I'm not popping that whole thing in my mouth. I do it in sections.
Yes,
it's
great.
It's how it was intended.
Yes.
So I'm super glad we agree on that. Okay.
Babe.
So give us your favorite wig of all time that you've ever owned, seen. Just shout somebody out on, put them on display, your favorite wig of all time.
My favorite wig that I've ever worn of all time is probably my red one, my red Rita Hayworth one that I have now. I love that one. And my favorite wig of all time outside of mine is anything Lady Bunny wears.
Mm-hmm. Just huge. Just
huge. Big volume.
I feel like it would like hurt your neck and shoulders.
Yeah.
It might be like cotton candy. It might be lightweight, you know, but there's a lot of hairspray, but you know.
A lot of hairspray. Yeah.
Gotta go to the chiropractor.
Last thing is, I can't believe this is my job moment you've ever had in your whole career, your whole life.
I mean, there's a lot. Mm-hmm. I'll give my like top three.
Yeah.
Can I do that? Because they're all like from different parts of my... So anytime like an idol of mine performed at Stage Fright, like Alice Ripley singing Sunset Boulevard, or Daphne Rubin Vega singing Mimi from Rent, or Adam Pascal and I doing Rent together. And, you know, like any like of those moments, like LaShawn singing From the Color Purple, like that, like those moments were like, I was so, I have always been so grateful that I don't know, that show just meant so much to me. So those moments, being the first drag queen in history to do a Q&A with a presidential candidate when Kirsten Gillibrand called me and asked to do that. That was really cool. And then talking about drag and politics for Vogue like a week ago. Like that was like, I'm not a fashion girl. And so to be in Vogue was like awesome, but to be in Vogue for something that was like, to be in Vogue to talk about like being a non-binary drag queen running for city council is something I never thought would be a sentence in my life, and I'm super grateful.
And with that, thank you so much, Marty, for coming on the show. We really appreciate you taking the time and talking to us. Where can people find you on social media, and where can people support you in your campaign?
So all my socials, the tweets and the grams and what have you, and TikTok, even though I don't really TikTok, because I'm an adult. No, I'm just kidding. I just don't fucking get it.
Me either.
Do you TikTok?
No.
I just downloaded it yesterday, and it's funny. I'm enjoying it, but I can't make them. I can't.
TikTok. I've tried to make TikToks, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm 900 years old. okay, so where can you find me? At Marti G Cummings. MartiGCummings. My regular website is MartiGCummings.com. My campaign website for District 7 in Manhattan is MartiForManhattan.com. You can sign up to volunteer or donate. If you live in New York City, all contributions are matched by the campaign finance system in New York, 8-1. So every dollar really makes a difference. And if you live in District 7, I would love to chat with you and hear from you and learn about the issues that are impacting you and your household and your block, so we can best be of service to you throughout our campaign, and also for when I am hopefully you're elected next year. But yeah, thanks.
Make sure you tune in to our live happy hour this Friday, October 23rd at 8 p.m. We're doing a spooky after hours happy hour with friend of the podcast, Jay Armstrong Johnson. He's going to be coming on to talk about his show benefiting Broadway Cares, which is happening for Halloween.
I'm in that.
Amazing.
Oh my God. So we're going to be chatting with Jay. We're excited. So make sure to tune in at bpn.fm/happy hour. You can find the podcast on social media at Equity One Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and at Equity One _ on Twitter.
Send us an email at EquityOnePodcast@gmail.com. And please head on over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate and review. It helps other listeners find us as well. Elliot, where can we find you?
You can find me at Elliot Maddox on everything. And you?
Caleb Dickey everywhere.
And until next time,
cheers.
Go vote.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.